This is more than LeBron's story. We've spent a lot of time talking about LeBron so far, but as the book title indicates, LeBron, the Cavs in Cleveland, and two big players in this, and it's evolutionary over time, is they are Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love.
Exactly. And had a few minutes after midnight on July 1st of 2014, the first time you could talk to guys to were even on your team for contract extensions, the Cavs had what I call the midnight meeting with Kyrie Irving. They met with their star guard, his father, and his agent. And then the Cavs showed up with Dan Gilbert, the owner, and David Griffin, the general manager, David Blatt, the coach. And interestingly to me, an assistant coach named Tyronn Lue. Usually an assistant coach is not in a high-level meeting like this, you know, foreshadowing that Tyronn Lue was going to be the next coach at some point. Had Kyrie Irving refused to sign an extension, LeBron doesn't come. And Kyrie Irving did not know what LeBron would do. Because on July 1st, I don't think LeBron knew what he would do. At that point, he was trying to decide. He hadn't, you know, my book is kind of divided into different types of meetings. And there's one called the kitchen table meeting, which is like July 6th. That hadn't even taken place yet. But if Irving decides, you know what, I'm not signing an extension, a year from now I'm a free agent, I'm out of here too, LeBron's not coming back, and then you would have almost a typical Cleveland story of what could have been, isn't, and the big names are walking out of here because they don't want to play in Cleveland. So convincing Irving was the first step. And then, of course, what followed it on July 6th, Dan Gilbert went down to Miami, and he met with LeBron James and LeBron's agent, whose name is Rich Paul, another agent named Mark Termini, and Maverick Carter, who's marketing agent, and his cousin. This is significant, Andrew, in that the agents that were behind the first move in that awful decision show, these were guys from out of town. They had Hollywood connections, New York connections, creative CCA, Creative Arts Agency. The guys now, in fact, LeBron was so unhappy with that, he dumped all those agents, and he then went to these local guys. He kept his cousin, Maverick Carter. Rich Paul was a friend of his who was just learning the agent business. Rich Paul's from Cleveland and Cleveland Benedictine High School in Glenville. Mark Termini is an older agent, is from Brecksville in Holy Name and Case Western Reserve. Maverick Carter's from Akron. So when Dan Gilbert goes down by himself to talk to LeBron to work out their problems, he's sitting with four guys from Northeast Ohio. That gives you a chance to come back because the other people around LeBron go, what do you want to play there for? It's lousy for your marketing, everything else. And to me, the fascinating thing, and Dan Gilbert talked to me at length about this, is they spent the first half hour working over. Dan Gilbert sent this hostile email when LeBron left. LeBron, the insulting ESPN show.
The decision,
you know, where Jim Gray just took him 15 questions to ask him, where are you going to be playing? Before that, he asked, are you still biting your fingernails? Just great hard-hitting stuff there. Talk about embarrassing. That was like one of the all-time lows. And you could see LeBron sitting there at that thing in ESPN. I went back and looked at it again. And about 5 minutes into it, all of a sudden, you know, because he had basically bald head, the sweat starts beating up. And he has that faraway look like, I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe not necessarily going to Miami, but this show. And I called a close friend of mine, Joe Tate, who did the cast for years and knew LeBron as a young player. And I go, did you watch that? He said, yeah. He goes, what did Joe think? He goes, it looked like one of those hostage tapes. I mean, it really did. And so the guys that messed all that up are gone. These local guys are in. So they work through the hard feelings. And then the next 2+ hours are, LeBron, talk business to me, Dan Gilbert. Tell me how we can win. And his first card he's able to play on the table is, I have Kyrie Irving. And they're talking, and he says, and Gilbert said, you know, we could get Kevin Love. And LeBron says, I'll call Kevin Love. You think you can get Kevin Love? We could work a trade. He goes, we could get a trade for Kevin Love. They had that kind of set if they could get LeBron. So he goes, all right, I got Irving. I got Love. I do not have the worst team in the NBA anymore at all. That's what LeBron's thinking. And then they went through, and Gilbert laid out how Miami failed to go way over the salary cap and do things to ensure that they would win. And Gilbert basically said, look, we will be the highest spending team in the NBA with you. We're going to spend what it takes to win.
One of the things that I was really impressed with in reading the book is how you give face to the faceless. And I'm referring to management. When you're a sports fan, typically, you're paying attention to those, a Cavs fan, you're paying attention to those five guys on the court, mm-hmm. and maybe the coach, and maybe some of the key subs. But beyond that, there are names that you hear occasionally. But not only do you give face to the management that's building and rebuilding a team over time, but you lay out just the series of steps that even was going on during those horrible 4 years after James went to Miami. There were very deliberate decisions being made with a long-term view.
Mm-hmm. And part of it is that I tend to develop good relationships with general managers on all the teams. It's one of the ways of source building. Secondly, as I've gotten older, I think when you're younger, you see things maybe more through the eyes of players and that. As you're getting older, I see it more towards the people trying to put together the big picture. Like when the Cavs were terrible, Chris Grant was their general manager right after LeBron left, and he didn't have a whole lot of friends. So I would hear his war stories, we have not lost 21 in a row as they did. And then this weird thing happened about 2 years in where LeBron is in Cleveland, and all of a sudden he starts talking, I could see myself playing here again. And that, by the way, stopped. The Cavs had a meeting and said, we're not going to say anything negative about LeBron anymore, because they were still kind of, the wounds were raw. But they're going, is he toying with us? I mean, he couldn't do anything for 4 years, but they go, well, we should start setting this up just in case. So they began to build everything that within 4 years, they were going to give LeBron a lot of money or somebody else a lot of money. And that's where they start piling up draft picks and these kind of things. But in the meantime, Chris Grant, whose name is long gone, but the remnant for him is that you have Kyrie Irving and you have Tristan Thompson. He drafted those guys. They always talk about guys who took the hit for somebody else, and he did. He became a fascinating character to me.
Terry, books like this just don't happen with a sports writer just parachuting in, no matter how good they are. The difference really has to be institutional memory that someone like you brings to coverage of the team.
Does that mean I'm old?
It was not meant that way.
No, yes, it is. But that's good,
but
though.
But it's the cumulative.
Yes.
It's the cumulative knowledge and experiences that really help to set this sort of storytelling apart. Do you think you could have told this story this way if you weren't quite so grounded in Cavs history?
No, or just, I first interviewed LeBron when he was 15. I could take you to the house where LeBron lived the first 3 years of his life with his grandmother, Frida, who, there's a lady named Melva. My mother died many years ago. She's like my mom now. She's adopted me. And she took me to the house where Frida would do her hair and other ladies' hair, basically a kind of a little cottage industry, shall we say. And I could show you the projects where LeBron were there. I saw probably 30 or 40 high school games that LeBron played. His coaches, Drew Joyce and Keith Danbrot, are, I would consider them personal friends. So all that, and along with having the fact that I covered the Cavs for, forever, and then I build relationships generally with people who are running the different teams, because it's good for my business, and frankly, it's good for them too. So that allowed this all to come together, as opposed to if a writer just comes in. And once or twice I've been kind of a hired gun brought in. In fact, I've stopped doing it because I realized I did a book, for example, with Jerry Tarkanian. He was looking for the UNLV, Nevada, Las Vegas. He should never have hired me, and I should have left the project. It wasn't his fault. We were a bad match. He's an interesting character as a coach, and I could write, but I had none of the things I just mentioned. And it came out okay, but it was very workmanlike and, that kind of stuff. Where this, I think there's a lot of heart to it. And them winning the title was just the exclamation point on what I thought was a great story that I was writing all the way along. And my biggest fear was when they were playing in the Eastern Conference Finals this past year, and it's 2-2. They had won the first two games and lost two to Toronto. I have 180 pages written at this point, and all kinds of things. We just talked about these different meetings and all that. And I'm driving home, and I'm talking to my wife, Roberta, who she does the first edits on the book. When I interview people, she does transcribes the tapes. And I said, you know, if they lose this series to Toronto, Dan Gilbert's liable to fire everybody, trade people. I mean, who knows? And that is not good for the book. So, in fact, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, well, we're just going to have to probably postpone this a year. So it wasn't like, gee, I got to get this thing out. It was like I was began to worry. I didn't need a title. I just needed them to get back to the finals. And I would have felt good about the book because I thought the story would have been powerful enough on its own.